So undertaking this journey, this inward journey, often requires a sense of safety. That it's it can be an unfamiliar journey for some of us, especially those of us on our first retreat. It's maybe an unfamiliar journey that we're launching into. And even those of us who've done this many times, we realize no two retreats are the same. You know, it's not like your second or third retreat, you figured it out and, you know how it's going to go. When we meet our inner life, we're meeting a dynamically changing experience, and every journey is different. And it does take some courage to make this journey, and a sense of safety is helpful in our exploration of our hearts and minds and bodies. Now, the usual way that we think of finding safety or security in our world, if you just reflect right now on, you know, where do you look for security? Where is it that you hang your hat? Where is it that you say, yep, this is where I'm going to find safety or security? And then reflect even on how reliable those things are that you place your security in. Much of the time, the things that we rely on for our safety or security or sense of groundedness are not that reliable. We often rely on money or jobs or partners or any number of things that, you know, maybe we have a sense of their stability. And yet when we really look at what we're trying to rely on, we realize that things just aren't that stable. Things are not very stable. I was looking out my back window the other day, a few days ago, and there was a small baby bird that was learning how to fly. It was a fledgling. And I saw the mother bird with the baby bird, and the mother bird was very sweet, actually. You know, the mother bird, the mother and father birds were both right there, kind of keeping track of this fledgling. And the mother bird would fly down to the ground where the baby was, and then I had this lattice work leaned up against my my fence, and the mother bird would hop up to one of the places on the lattice work, and then hop up to the next level, and the baby bird like fluttered madly and tried to hop up to the lattice work, and then, you know, eventually, you know, I watched the baby bird, you know, kind of flutter up, hop step by step up this lattice work, and then it lost its footing and was back down on the ground again. So the mother bird went down, and it was very sweet to watch this. And about an hour later, I saw two cats in my backyard looking. And I kind of chased them away and went out, and there was the baby bird. You know, so it's really a kind of a very poignant reminder of the unreliability of life. It was interesting, having had that experience just yesterday, I saw a squirrel kind of wandering around my backyard. And the first thing that I felt was, because there was a little bit of joy in seeing this squirrel and its engagement with the world. And yet the first feeling was, wow, you know, it's so tenuous. You know, life is so tenuous. And that's true of all of us. It's true of all of our partners. It's true of all of our friends. It's true of all of our coworkers. Things are tenuous. And so the usual ways that we try to find reliability actually are not so reliable. And You know, how can we begin this journey? Where can we look for some kind of reliability or some kind of refuge? The word refuge is often used in this kind of ritual that we're going to engage with, this ritual of coming into community together. In refuge, the word refuge means a place of safety, of security. And in our practice, the Buddha offered three refuges that help us find some degree of safety as we walk this path, some degree of sense of security as we walk this path. So the three traditional refuges are refuge in the Buddha, refuge in the Dharma, and refuge in the Sangha. And there are really three aspects of one refuge. It's not that they're separate refuges, but they're three aspects of one refuge, which to me essentially is what is reliable in this world is truth. What is reliable is that this is what's happening right now. And that's essentially a statement, in a way, of the Dharma. The term Dharma has multiple meanings. It means the teachings of the Buddha. It means the practices associated with the teachings of the Buddha. But it also has the meaning of truth, of just this is what's happening right now. There are certain truths that are kind of fundamental. The truth of impermanence, for example. You know, that is a truth. It's a very deep truth that rapidly through our experience, things are changing moment by moment. There is some degree of reliability that can be found by aligning ourselves with that truth. Our typical way of meeting the world, we resist that truth. We try to arrange the world to suit us, find things that we like to bring into our world, get rid of things that we don't like, to have them not be in our world. And so we're kind of forever in this dance of construction, trying to figure out how to create a world that will feel okay for us. And we're kind of fighting gravity in a way. We're fighting this flow of impermanence by trying to create, construct this world. And so this essentially, you know, I look at this refuge, this true refuge, as being aligning ourselves with truth. Aligning ourselves with truth. That when we can align ourselves with truth, that is, there is some degree of reliability there. Rather than fighting truth, we are entering into meeting truth. And the Buddha found in his own exploration of his mind, of the world, that it was possible to meet this truth without any resistance whatsoever. And that meeting of that truth, of the impermanent, unreliable nature of experience, that meeting of that truth actually brought a great deal of happiness. It brought a very deep sense of ease, of peace, of contentment. And that he found a kind of a balance of mind, a non-reactivity in the face of that truth. And that non-reactivity in the face of that truth led him to the deepest peace, which he called freedom. That is what he said is reliable. That freedom, that non-reactivity around changing circumstance. And so he found the possibility of that, And the happiness that came from that, I mean, you know, on the surface of it, when I hear, yeah, meet the truth of impermanence or meet the truth of unreliability of experience, first hearing that, my mind went something like, well, you know, that sounds depressing. You know, why do that? Wouldn't it be better to just ignore that and, like, you know, eat, drink, and be merry? You know, wouldn't that be better? But the actual meeting of this truth brings such a deep happiness. It's a completely different kind of happiness than the kind of happiness we're used to looking for. So this, the Buddha found this possibility and said, you know, hey, this is possible. As Pam was saying, you know, it's possible for all of us to find this happiness. So he found that for himself. He found that reliable refuge for himself and proclaimed that it's possible for all of us. And so we take refuge in the Buddha for having found this. We take refuge in the Dharma, which is the actual truth of things as they are. And we can also take refuge to some extent in the practices that we do here. Take refuge in mindfulness, take refuge in the schedule, take refuge in sitting and walking. You know, the way the practice unfolds is not under your control. One of my teachers in responding to a yogi, this is one of my Burmese teachers, the retreatant was reporting all of these difficult mind states and how that reactive they were. And the teacher says, all those things that are happening in your mind, they are none of your business. It's like, that's a different perspective. It's like, our journey is kind of out of our control. The practice, just meeting things with mindfulness, that we can kind of do. So that's what we're engaged with. That's what we can take refuge in. We can't take refuge in the changing set of stuff. I mean, we can't take refuge in, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to get really calm this sitting. That may not happen. But we can perhaps take refuge in, well, I'll just sit here and see what happens. That's the practice. We just watch what unfolds. Whatever happens in your bodies and minds, it's just what's supposed to be happening. And our exploration is, can we come into alignment with that? Can we meet that? And there are skillful means. At times, what's happening in our minds and bodies is overwhelming. It's challenging for us. And sometimes we may need to take some action, do something a little different. Maybe take a walk instead of sitting, or go out into nature, or do something to help balance our minds if we're getting overwhelmed. And we'll talk about that, how to work with overwhelm. And so we take refuge in the Buddha for finding this reliable place, refuge in the Dharma for the truth, coming into alignment with the truth. And the third refuge, the refuge in the Sangha, is the refuge in the community. And I think traditionally the community that we take refuge in is the community of people who have understood the Buddhist teachings to a fairly deep degree, so that there's a possibility of offering support to others along the path. That we take refuge in people that can help us along the path. And this includes all of us here. That we are the Sangha for this retreat, and you will all be supporting each other. So I think of taking refuge in the Sangha is taking refuge in the supports that help us to be with the truth. You'll see how helpful it is to sit in community, how you might find some sitting that your mind is sitting there going, when are they going to ring the bell? When are they going to ring the bell? And open your eyes and you see other people sitting there. You don't know what's going on in their mind. They may be doing the same thing you're doing in their mind, but on the surface of it, it looks like they're sitting there pretty calmly. And you look across and see that person, and it's like, well, if they can do it, I can do it. So we support each other in this way. So the refuge in the Buddha, the one who discovered the possibility of freedom. And I also think of the refuge in the Buddha as taking refuge in our capacity to wake up. He said it's possible for all of us. There's a kind of inherent capacity that we all have for this process of coming into alignment with truth. We have that capacity. So we can take refuge in that capacity that exists for all of us. Taking refuge in the truth itself, and taking refuge in the supports that help us to meet our minds. So along with the refuges, we also come together in community, and along with the many things that we've talked about to help create the community container for this particular retreat center, we share some agreements of how we'll behave together here on retreat. And there are five simple agreements that we make together, that we will refrain from taking life. And this includes taking the life of insects or, you know, small beings, small critters. And that, you know, if you see a mosquito or something, rather than swatting the mosquito, seeing if you can gently remember to brush it away, or, you know, if you see spiders or something in your room, rather than hitting it on the wall, maybe capturing it with a cup and a piece of paper and taking it outside. You may see, actually, how respecting life in this way rebounds on your mind. It actually brings a beautiful quality into the mind to refrain from taking life. So refraining from taking life, refraining from taking what is not given. And this this is a way that we kind of have a sense of safety in this community together, that we all agree that we will leave things that have not been offered to us, we'll leave them alone. I had just an interesting example of this at dinner. It was a really silly thing in a way, but I put a piece of toast in the toaster and then got involved with talking with some people, and I forgot my toast. I went down to the staff lounge, and we were having our dinner, and Pam said, "Oh, you left your toast up there." It had been maybe been 20 minutes or something, and I said, "Well, I'll go see if it's still there." And I walked up, and there it was. The toast was in the toaster. Nobody had taken the toast, so I got my toast. There's a kind of a joke in a way on retreats, but it's true. It's not a joke. That if somebody dropped a $20 bill on the floor, it would either stay there or somebody would pin it up on the note board and say, "Found this on the floor outside room, whatever, you know." There's that kind of container that we have here, that we leave things that are not offered where they are. So refraining from taking life, refraining from taking what's not offered, refraining from engaging in sexual misconduct. And this is really about containing your sexual energy. You know, it's not to repress your sexual energy, because sexual energy is a very natural part of the wholeness of our lives. You know, that no part left out, our sexual energy is part of that. But we can feel that sexual energy without letting it leak out into the container of the retreat. So we're not asking you to repress it. We're asking you rather to feel it internally. Acknowledge it and feel it internally. And to not engage in making eye contact with people. To not engage with, like, you know, if you find there's a kind of a familiar event that happens to people on retreat sometimes. Certainly happened to me on my first several retreats. So it may be happening here. It's called the Vipassana romance. That in the silence, you look across the room, you watch somebody sitting, you see them walking, and it's like, that is the perfect person for me. That's my soulmate. I know it's my soulmate. And so you might have the inclination to, like, start putting your shoes next to their shoes, or, you know, sitting next to them in the dining hall or something like that. And we just like to ask you to notice that feeling and to not act on it. You know, see if you can not vibe into the environment if there's that kind of sexual energy going for you. It will make a kind of a more settled retreat, and you'll find actually that there's a lot you can learn from that. And every single time I've had one of these, by the end of the retreat, well, actually mostly during the retreat, a whole scenario unfolded in my mind. Like, well, there was that person, and I was, you know, looking at them and watching them, and I was, you know, falling in love with them in my mind, and we were, like, starting to date, and, like, I was starting to meet his family, and, like, you know, his brother, and, oh, his brother, I actually like his brother better, and, like, this brother I constructed completely in my mind. And so it was just break up, and it's just incredible to watch the mind. So, you know very little about everybody, and the lesson of this is very much that this is constructed in your mind. And, you know, every time when I've actually ended up talking to the person, it's like, wow, you know, that's not who I thought they were at all. So containing that sexual energy, not letting it leak out into the container of the retreat. And then refraining from false speech. And here, in a silent container of the retreat, that's not terribly difficult to engage with. And yet there will be times we'll be having practice discussions. We'll have group meetings with you. And in those times, it's amazing sometimes how exaggeration can creep in. Or I certainly found that happening for myself in practice discussions. And it can be very painful to realize that. So just watching your speech in those times when there is speech, refraining from false speech. And the fifth is refraining from intoxicants, refraining from recreational drugs and alcohol for the duration of the retreat. This does not include prescription medication. If you have prescription medication, please continue to take it on your regular schedule. But this precept is really about honoring clarity, honoring the mind's capacity for clearness that is obscured by recreational drugs and alcohol. So that fifth precept is really about honoring waking up, which is what we're doing here. Looking at our minds, trying to meet our minds in their wholeness. And so the ritual that we do here to connect with this sense of security. You know, actually, the precepts that we'll take, these five precepts that we'll take, is very connected, tied back to this refuge. Because in the agreements that we make, that we'll all agree to take these precepts together, there is a sense of safety that comes from that. It is said that the offering of these precepts is offering the gift of fearlessness that it provides safety and security for countless beings for us to engage with these precepts. And we engage with them as a practice. It's not so much thou shalt not. It's more, I like to think of using these precepts as mindfulness bells. If we see ourselves getting ready to hit that spider on the wall, it's like, wait a minute, wake up, what am I doing? You know, try to help these precepts help us to engage in this skillful container. And if we break one of these precepts, then not to beat yourself up, not to, you know, say, oh, I'm such a horrible person, is to say, oh, that wasn't so skillful. What can I learn from that? How did that happen? What can I learn from that? Can I commit now to trying to not do that in the future? So that we don't have to engage with them. They're training rules. In fact, the word for precept, Sikha Padang in Pali, means training rule. These are rules of training. And the understanding actually is that they're training rules because the more awake we become, the more free we become, the less inclination we would have to break these precepts. It is said that someone who's fully enlightened naturally lives an ethical life. They no longer have to train in these precepts. They live them. They don't even have to think about it. So they're training rules for us because we are not at that place of being fully awakened yet. So we train. We train in these guidelines of ethical conduct together. And so we'll do this, taking the refuges, going for refuge and taking the precepts together. We'll do it in a kind of a formal way. The refuges we'll take in the Pali language, and I'll do this in a call and response form, a couple words at a time so that you can follow along. And the refuges, there's this first part, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa, is basically an homage to the Buddha. It's saying, thank you, Buddha, for discovering this Dharma and helping us to awaken. And the next part is taking refuge. I go for refuge to the Buddha. I go for refuge to the Dharma. I go for refuge to the Sangha. And we'll do that for the second time. I go for refuge to the Buddha, to the Dharma, to the Sangha. And we'll do this in the Pali language. And then we will take the precepts together, and we'll do that in English, so that I find it helpful. The precepts, I mean, the refuges, we can kind of get a sense of what we're saying. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Buddhang, Buddha, saranang, refuge, gacchami. Walk to. I go for refuge to the Buddha. And then we repeat, Dhammang saranang gacchami. I go for refuge to the Sangha. Sangang saranang gacchami. So we can kind of follow along in the Pali. But in the precepts, I find it helpful to recall in English what we're agreeing to do together. So let's take the refuges and the precepts together. Namo tassa. Bhagavato. Arahato, Samma Sambuddhasa, Namo Tassa, Bhagavato, Arahato, Samma Sambuddhasa, Namo Tassa, Bhagavato, Arahato, Samma Sambuddhasa, Buddhang, Saranang, Gacchami, Dhammang, Saranang, Gacchami. Sangam. Saranang. Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Buddhang. Saranang. Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Dhammang. Saranang. Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Sangham. Saranang. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Buddhang. Saranang. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Dhammang. Saranang. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Sangham. Saranang. Gacchami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking life. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. I undertake the precept to refrain from false speech. I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicants which cloud the mind and lead to heedlessness. So with that, we've formally entered into the container of the retreat, and we'll finish with a guided meditation with another sitting.